I want to ask you about rebuttal.
That's correct, Your Honor. If the court may please, I'm Warren Steele. I represent the appellant Samantha Carano in this matter. The primary issue in this case is one of first impression in Virginia. Specifically, did the trial court err in reducing and modifying the spousal support, which was non-modifiable under an agreement incorporated in the final decree, under the guise of a purge plan, especially since no one asked for that and she did it sua sponte?
There are two things that I'm hoping you can help me with, because you got an empty chair there and I'm trying to navigate this. First thing is, there's all these cases that talk about with civil contempt is discretionary. And I'm trying to figure out what that means in this context. Does that mean that the court can do, one, refuse to even enforce and leave the parties to just their contractual enforcement? And two, can the court split the baby, given that discretion, and say, well, I'm only going to enforce as to part of this?
Let me answer that. First of all, the court can take remedies on what they found he was in contempt. This court found that he was civilly in contempt, and $70,000+. And what normally happens, and I've been doing this 41 years, is the court will mandate that the order is maintained of the 1800. There's probably flexibility of the payment of the arrearage of $70,000, even at $100 a month, and we didn't raise that issue as abuse of discretion on that. Maybe we could have. The guy's going to be 104 years old when it's paid, if I do my math, but that we didn't raise that. So I think the court can take could have found that there was no contempt and left him with other remedies, which might be judgments, liens, things of that kind, but not to modify a fixed order, because that changed the inherent contract. And maybe the court thought it was onerous. Maybe the court said, you know, in hindsight, boy, this was a bad deal, so I'm going to try to give him a break. That's rewriting the contract in violation of 2109C, clearly. And that's our point. This would be a tremendous adverse policy to let the bar out there that does this kind of work say, you're going to get a second shot at the apple to modify when you couldn't do it on a petition to modify under 2109C.
And one of the obvious concerns of the trial court was this guy's ability to pay all this.
He said he could pay. Look at 139 is when he did his purge plan. On page 412, he comes into court and says, I've paid two payments since I filed my purge plans. Might have been a few days late, but he said, I've paid it. His lawyer on 424 says, do you agree to pay and continue to pay? Yes. No one argued it. No one petitioned for it. No one pleaded it. And the judge just did it. And that, I think, even if there was some discretionary issue, that'd be an abuse of discretion on that record. Although I'd say this is a matter of law, that you can't do it. So on
right.
this case,
and
he had the ability to pay.
And I follow you that, you know, once there's an agreement, short of somehow setting that aside, then it's got to be enforced under the terms of the agreement. One of the hard boundaries, though, is with civil contempt, the idea is you have the keys to your freedom in your own pocket. And you're not in willful contempt if you can't comply because you lack the means to comply. And what the court hints at, but doesn't outright find, is that, you know, given this all this guy's obligations for rent, food, and then these the child support and the spousal support, that he's not going to be able to comply.
Well, first of all, let's put the findings in context. She found, as a matter of factual findings in the record, that he was evasive. For an hour, he had selective memory loss of not being able to...
Yeah, I mean, that's striking how there's $20,000 worth of unaccounted...
So she basically is saying, I've made all these findings about income that he could have had. He had the IRA that he liquidated, or 401k that gave him $30,000 that he decided to pay to his family or friends in lieu of paying one penny towards the spouse. 3 weeks ago, and there was a new case subsequent to my brief called Gregory versus Gregory. It's unpublished, but in that case, this court reversed a judge who made an award of support where the findings were inherently incredible. I don't find any credibility to findings of income, an interest in a business, all of those kinds of things. That's what we have here. This judge says, I've listened to you, Mr. Carano, for an hour about all your denials of being able to explain where the income came from, and I find that inherently incredible. And then later, she, inconsistent with her findings, says, I don't think you can pay it. But she doesn't have the right.
Do we send this back for another evidentiary hearing?
No. I think clearly that the court, it's a matter of law. It should be sent back with instructions that the purge plan that they proffered, which was continue the 1800, has to be met. It was what he said I will do. It's what he did, in fact, do. And
well, it's now, go back now, let's say that support anyway, right?
Now, the child support we didn't raise as a what will happen on that, and that's the second issue we raised. If the court said that you can reduce the to 600, then we've obviously got a violation of the presumptive amount of child support because they were using the amount ordered, not the amount received. I think the case law is really clear on that. But let's assume that it's 1800. She can still deviate. We didn't raise that issue. There was issues about spousal support as a debt. I think 108.2B11 says you can consider debts. I guess a spouse support is a debt. We didn't raise that. And there were some issues about daycare costs and whether there was an adult and other factors. So, yeah, she could still then redo a deviation, maybe a little less, probably would not be appealable within the discretion to find that it's unjust or inappropriate, which is the deviation exceptions. But what the court...
Because the court is looking at...
Of course not putting him in jail right now if he pays the $100 a month. Do we like that as a long-term payment plan? No, but it's...
I think the court's looking at it holistically and not just, you know, siloed with the spousal and the child support.
But you can't... If it was a matter of material change of circumstance and that was part of the agreement, then they could have certainly made that finding. But she's basically, with a little, you know, violin playing, saying... I feel sorry for you, and I'm changing it. That's a substantial modification of her vested rights. She has vested rights in that amount.
Under 109C, there would be no question if he had not been in arrears, if he were completely compliant and somehow came into court, she couldn't reduce it to $600 going forward.
Right.
And that's effectively what the court has done.
I don't see any substantive difference, and that's why we've argued. I've cited some other cases.
With the exception of he had acted badly beforehand enough to be found in contempt. It would be odd, it strikes me as an odd result that by allowing yourself to go into contempt gets you more relief than you would be entitled to if you met your obligation the entire way.
As a policy matter, what she did is against what we would want, and that's to encourage people to pay. Now, I would say this. If you're worried about Mr. Carano, and I'm not, I'm worried about my client who needs the money. If she later came back and he said, I can't even pay the 100, or I'm behind on my child support because I got to pay my spousal support, she could then look at his income and expenses at that time and say, I can't change the order, you got to pay it, but I'm not going to put you in jail. But you can't change the 1800 and just say... And another thing...
I mean, where I'm coming from on that is, you know, the court's looking at the totality of the picture, and he's got child support and spousal support. And so it seems to me if we say, well, you can't modify in this way the spousal because it was an agreement, it's vested rights, and short of due process and outright inability to comply, you got to keep paying, period.
Correct.
That's the only, you know, or they renegotiate something else. Maybe that's another out, but that's not before us. But because the court's looking at the whole picture, that's why I was, and the child support, you know, appears to have been done in this flawed way, that maybe that...
But in substance, she's rewriting then the contract, and you're giving the authority to do that, and that's just not the law, and it shouldn't be. And so it still has to be the 1800. And again, he came in with a plan. In this case, so the facts of this case are, I can do it, and he did do it. So I think that, again, nobody asked. She just, sui sponte, all of a sudden just did it. I think everybody was kind of, read the record, the comments.
If the court finds that, given all of your... living expenses, you know. I mean, because he can't live in a refrigerator carton and dumpster dive to eat. I mean, he's got to spend money to maintain himself.
Well, I tell you what, you put him in jail for 30 days and say, you know, civil, the money will show up. It always does. But and it did here a little bit. We all know that happens. And I don't have the same concerns. And we shouldn't be sitting here worried about that. That's a future contempt issue about would he then be jailed at some point in time for that, and maybe the court would say, I'm not going to put you in jail, I'm going to continue the order to pay the arrearage of $50 a month or $10 a month, but not change the underlying basic amount. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any authority, that being a case law, and I know there's no statutory authority, but any authority I might have missed a case, that allows the court, once you've got a position of contempt, that allows the court to rewrite the contractual terms of the PSA in reference to spousal support.
What's the issue of first impression in Virginia? I could not find any case. I've cited cases in three other states. That's all I could find. I think the Tyner case is as close as you can get, where the judge tried to feel sorry about a lump sum, like, well, just your payment.
I would agree with you. I couldn't find anything either. I just wanted to make sure that as you prepared, I, of course, read all of your...
But documents. I would say that we do have the statute and case law that says you can't change it, and you have to look at the substance of what she's done under this guise of a contempt. Now, our position is you can't do that under that, and I think this is an important issue for guidance in the future of people that are... it's going to open up the floodgates of people coming in and trying to get a second bite at the apple when they're in a client with contempt. Now, keeping them out of jail, giving a lower amount of repayment, that's always part of these things. But in every order I've ever had, it's always keep up on your obligation and we'll work on your arrearage. And if it's $10 a month because he can't pay his rent, he's got a new kid, he's got a new wife, we're going to hear about whether she works or not. But apart from that, that's another case for future, and we really shouldn't be giving
and that's
future.
That's the court looking at something retrospectively. We have the debt. What do we pay? It's not setting forward that there can never be contempt going forward as long as you pay one-third of the amount that you
are. Right. If he pays the $1,800, and if he's later on in default on the $1,800, the court might say, I'm going to do this and this, but it's not changing $1,800 and saying you're going to stay out of jail if you pay $600, which is almost like... blocking it. Yeah, what if you find... Yeah, I mean, basically, if this guy ever got the lottery, that means we can't come in because he's still under 600.
Right, I mean, at a minimum, the court has to be able to... I mean, that's not this case, but if you had someone who was just outright laid off, and the court said, well, until you find a job, I'm not going to... Don't bother with show causes, because...
That's a different issue, and I agree. The judge may very unlikely put someone in jail. I've had those kind of cases with an individual who had a heart attack who sold cars on commission. And he couldn't make it. The arrearage built up. We worked it out with a life insurance policy to fund in case he died, which he did, and paid the support arrearage out of that. But those things come up. But in this case, this judge erred as a matter of law, and that's our position. Also erred as a matter of law on the conditions he put in the health insurance for Kevin, who was a stepchild. I think the law is clear that if it's an obligation for a you don't have a legal obligation for this child, then it's a matter of contract,
right,
and she rewrote
to that.
I think that's real clear. Now, fact is, he's covered right now, but that doesn't make it moot because it's still a standard in the future that we need to address. I know sometimes if there's you've met the problem with a condition.
Yeah, here we might as well fix that too.
Well, it wasn't the... It was... Yes, that's right. And then the last one is the attorney's fees, and I think that's the clearest issue. We have a contract that basically she's rewritten on that. Her excuse was he owed prior legal fees for other things that were found, and Rutledge and all the other cases that we've cited say you can't rewrite the contract on that and say zero. It says full, all fees. It's pretty clear, and I think our recent appellate cases have said you also get the appellate fees for having to enforce it here. So this is a case where, you know, Laughlin, Judge Humphrey once said, Mr. Deal, you're always asking for fees. Well, we are. But here I think we have a contract basis for it, not just the discretion of the court on this, because this is a case of first impression. I think if we didn't have a contract on that issue, I wouldn't get fees. I understand that because it's, you know, a legitimate issue of reasonable debate, maybe. I don't think so. But as far as the fee here, we have a contract, and I think that on remand the court would have to award fees in accordance with the contract. I think that's absolutely clear. Guess any other questions?
Thank you very much. Come down to Greek Council and take up the last case.